Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Dara here. All right, we're doing an all-local show today. Local people, local families, local foods. I am excited about today, but you know what I really want? I want to know, what are you cooking? What are you cooking? What are you cooking? This is like the most thrilling thing. I'm very excited. Are you making Super Bowl things? Are you just making your grandma's cinnamon rolls? What are you up to? 651-989-9226. Text me. I will read it out over the air. Then your grandma's snickerdoodles can be famous. 651-989-9226. Or throw it up on my Facebook page, Dara.Grumdahl. I'll catch that. I'll check that in a bit here. So who are the local stars today? Melissa Silva Diaz of El Burrito Mercado in St. Paul. And then later on this hour, we'll have J.D. Fratsky of Artisan Plaza, Falls Landing, and Cannon Falls. Have you been to El Burrito Mercado? I bet you have. Almost everybody in the great state of Minnesota seems to make it there sometimes. It's got the greatest takeout counter in the history of time. You're too afraid to make your own guacamole? The Melissa Silva Diaz crew, the family, they will make that for you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right.
Excited to be here.
I can't even remember what kind of a baby food writer I was the first time I went to El Burrito Mercado in St. Paul. For people that don't know, let's talk about it. Your family has really interesting, deep Minnesota roots.
Yeah. So 1979 is when, so we just celebrated 40 years last year.
Wow.
I know. So my parents are from Aguascalientes, Mexico, which is kind of central Mexico. And my mother is second to the youngest of 13 siblings.
Wow.
Yeah. So not uncommon in the Mexican family and Irish families, I suppose.
Yeah, it was not uncommon. My ex-mother-in-law, her family had 19.
Oh, my gosh,
so
yeah.
So it was a Swedish-American thing, yeah, as well.
My mom was actually the only one that only, I shouldn't even say only had three children. Everybody else, it was 5, 7, 9, 13, 20.
Just the organization. I don't know how people do it.
I mean,
I know that they, a lot of people have done, but I just find I merely have two. And like, there are days when I'm just like, oh my God,
yeah,
another lunch. How could this be? So
she's the second of the youngest, and all the older siblings and my grandmother all started migrating to Minnesota. I don't know why Minnesota. I've never asked that question, but
we talked about this. It was for the beet harvest.
Well, that's what they did, but I don't know what I mean. Like, because Texas and California and
why would you?
Yeah,
drive
why
so
all
far?
The way to Minnesota? Why so far? No, so that's like a question for my mom or one of my aunts.
I'm really curious about that too, because you got to think that was before the interstate system. So
right.
That was a drive.
That was definitely a transportation challenge, for sure.
Like an old car before they had seatbelts. You know,
these are all now all these follow up questions I've got in my head. But they did. They came and worked in the beet fields, and you know, back in the day, it was workers came and then they'd migrate back to Mexico and come back again, and eventually, at some point, different members of the family started putting some roots down here in the Twin Cities and mostly St. Paul. And then my mother as well. And then she met my father in Aguascalientes and brought him along. And here we are, three siblings and El Burrito Mercado, the fourth, the other
so
baby.
I love this story. Baby. I wrote a story for Minneapolis St. Paul magazine, and I really found out a lot about your family history. Yeah. And it was so interesting, because your whole, you know, people maybe look at El Burrito Mercado today and it's huge. It's like 4,000 square feet or something. And it looks
13.
very... Oh, 13,000.
13,000 square feet. 13. The entire, when you take the restaurant, the patio, and everything into account, it's almost, we've almost got the whole block.
Yeah.
They won't
huge.
Sell me the building on the corner yet.
But it all started tiny. Your mom took over a tiny,
800 square foot.
Square.
Yep.
Yep. And you were, you know, you'd come home after school and you'd help in the 800 yep. square foot convenience store.
Yeah, we did. Well, at that time, at the very beginning, we were just goofing around there. And we were pushing each other, my brother and sister and I, hiding in boxes. And my dad would bring boxes home. We were playing. We were playing store. Yeah. and then when they moved into the place, which is now Novedades Lupitas, which is a little novelty store and clothing right next door. That's when we were already in school then and went to a Catholic local school there on the west side and a walk after school and then learned to stock shelves and stock bakery trays and cashier.
So that part of St. Paul, we call West St. Paul, it's always a bit confusing because it's river navigation. So yeah. It's kind of south of downtown St. Paul, but it's called West St. Paul. So West St. Paul.
Actually, West Side. We call it West Side. And we're in between West St. Paul and downtown. We're that little strip of Cesar Chavez down towards, you know, all the way over to the river.
And it was just like a tight-knit community.
Yeah, it is.
And it still is.
And it still is. And it's very diverse. I would say probably still, predominantly Latino, Mexican, but even diverse within the Latino community as well. Our Lady of Guadalupe, I don't even know how long Our Lady of Guadalupe has been there, but it's been an anchor for the Mexican Latino community. Neighborhood House and Wellstone Center, also another, anchor in the community, also serving predominantly Spanish-speaking communities. So.
And so what was it like growing up there in the, 60s, 70s, 80s? Because it always seems to me like a village inside the
city. Well, that felt home to me. I felt that's where I felt myself. It was the Spanish and it was the food and at home it was the same thing and at church. And even the school all the way up through elementary, high school. And then my mom wanted us to go off to private Catholic high schools And then that experience that became a little bit more of a different experience for myself. But that felt home. West Side was definitely where I, and it still is where I just feel Melissa. Like, that's really who I am,
And just, your mom started with this tiny convenience store while your dad was off working as a welder all day. And you guys were, I'm going to say helping,
We were. We shouldn't have to pay a babysitter, so we were helping by being there. She'd keep an eye on us. And at that time, it was my grandma that took care of us when they did have to stay late. He started out as a welder. And then when this opportunity came up, of course, when you're starting a new business, there's no income.
Right.
And so he did that. And my mom was a seamstress and still did a little bit of that on the side until the business really took off. And then they were able to be there full time. But they were doing everything.
You told me stories of, you'd be fast asleep and then your dad would come get you at midnight. Like, the truck is here. It's got to get unloaded. We're going to do a fireman carry. Get these things off the truck.
Yeah. He started out with a little station wagon. We'd go and just get a few he would go to Chicago. And then it became a minivan and then a regular sized van. And then that became a little truck and then a bigger truck until finally we sourced out a trucking company to start bringing things in. And then we started doing wholesale ourselves. And then, now the big companies like Supervalu and all those. And there's a lot of local distributors with the Latin product that we can purchase from now. But yeah, it's definitely changed. Yeah, we used to.
I love that because you don't hear, so many businesses today are so, it's like I'm a consultant and I go into healthcare software and I fix and it's just, it's hard to really understand, but I can understand your family business.
Yeah.
It was a.
Yeah. The growth and the development, the evolving of it and just in how the demographics have changed. I think when they started out, it was just big enough for the community that was, and they did it because they were craving Mexican food. There was a few tortillerias. I think there was two, and then there was Morgan's that no longer exist. There were just not even a handful of places that they could get Mexican ingredients, and they started doing their homework and finding out how they could get it. And then my mom, they started making carnitas. Aguascalientes, where my dad is from, is very known for the pork carnitas. And so he started making them in the little tiny shop across the street. And that's when the little deli started. Then my mom did the burritos. This was probably late 70s. I want to say late 70s or early 80s. Just like individually wrapped burritos, little ones. And that she would just, sell out of the deli. And it was tiny little, probably did like a dozen at a time. And now I can't even tell you how many burritos we're yanking out of there now on a daily basis. But yeah, it's been really... it's an emotional journey too, just a lot. It's a family business, so there's lots of ups and downs in the business itself, and we encountered a lot of bumps in the road and hard times, and scary times. And then as a family, we're normal like any other family. We've got our own issues, and that's what makes it unique. And I think that's what keeps us together, wanting to keep El Burrito, sharing with you that these different opportunities come up. And you're like, but how do we do that? You know, how do you still maintain the brand?
That's the size you're at now is that people come to you and they're like, we would like a small El Burrito Mercado here. And then you have to figure out if you can actually make the money work. And
Right. And who's going to do it? And that we're family. We want to have time with our kids and spend time with our parents that are aging as well. And so, yeah, it's a challenge, but it's fun. And we're doing it together. You know, we're going through it together.
One of the things I love about El Burrito Mercado in St. Paul is so you have the Minneapolis one, and that was the old Pepito's, and mm-hmm. you've been kind of switching that up and, making that something new. But the one in St. Paul is always kind of the first in my heart. And one of the things I love about it is it's such a destination. There's so much going on in there. I was there right around Day of the Dead time, and mm-hmm. You had all the little crystal sugar skulls mm-hmm. out, and it's so fun to see them. And you have you're always changing up, like, different handicrafts. And,
yeah, seasonal. That's an exciting thing. My mom started over 20 years ago, was importing the handmade artesanía, so all the little gift items that you see in the market. And we definitely do it seasonal. Like, you'll see the skulls and the pan de muerto and then the Christmas, you see, the different, all the different ornaments and nacimientos, the nativity sets. And so, yeah, definitely, and then Cinco de Mayo, you're going to see all the fiesta items. And then the deli as well. We always really, and the bakery, we relate the foods to the season, because we have all kinds of seasonal foods for, every holiday. Latinos, Mexicanos, we're all about the food, and we have something for every, mostly it's tamales and mole, but we actually are doing something that I'd love, I think, precisely because of what you're talking about. People come in and there's so much, and they don't, it can be intimidating, I think, but they want to learn. So we've established this first Saturday of the month is Sample Saturday. So you come in, and we don't just do these little dinky. Like, they're nice sized. We're actually doing the chicharrón prensado that you were the first person to ever write about it. You did it a couple of years ago. We actually just shared it on social media again because we're sampling it today. And I don't know if you remember, it's that really spicy chile árbol sauce with the chicharrón prensado, which is the pork rinds with the meat on it.
That stuff is delicious.
It is, and people, that's one of those items that they wouldn't, it's a best-selling item, but amongst Mexicanos, like, who know what it is. So when you wrote about it, I was like, whoa, now that's a gringa. I've never heard talk about chicharrón prensado, and so it was, so we have that today. That's one of them. Barbacoa is a mild one. That's a very popular shredded beef. And then we're doing the fruta picada, so the freshly cut fruit with the chile tajín.
Oh, so that's a very easy thing to do. It's funny when you say this, because I've actually had people reach out to me and say, "Could you do a tour of El Burrito Mercado?"
Like, have them call us.
I feel that I am not. I feel that I would be very ill qualified
in some way.
Well, maybe, but I would just be a little bit like, "And here's the avocados and these," And
we do get a lot of requests actually for this. So people, they want to come in and have dinner. We're more than happy to accommodate a nice group and do a little tour, and we do the tamalada class.
So this is something I didn't know you did until I kind of drilled into your family history, but people can actually make tamales. So tell me about that. So tamales, if people don't know, it's the corn husk on the outside, and you put some masa, which is a corn filling, on the inside, and then you put another kind of more filling in there, and then you wrap it all up, and that's how a tamale is made. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have never made one because it's much easier to go buy them.
For sure.
But it really increases your understanding. And you've put together this thing. Tell people about it.
Yeah. So in around 2012, we put together a tamalada, which is the coming together of making tamales. And so it's usually it's family and friends that come together. And it is a long process. It's a couple days, all the prep. And then the day of, though, the fun part is the assembling of it. So our tamalada is, my mom shares about tamales, probably even more than you want to know, and shares about her history and how she learned to make tamales. And then we have all the ingredients there for everyone to, whoever is registered for it, to make their own tamales. And so they assemble it, and then we give them instructions to take them home and freeze them and or steam them for the holidays or whenever they're ready to eat tamales. So It's a fun class. It sells out every year. We only do it around the holidays because it is a lot of work to get it together.
You should do it all the time. You should just have kits. People should just, not like kits like to take home, but you should have kits that, you know, so people could do it there because it's...
Well, there's the stuff is there. The corn husks are there. The masa is there year-round. The mole, the filling is there year-round. The pot, so...
I'm just going to keep pressuring you because I think like people love to go to a brewery and do knitting or something. You know, like,
hey, all that's those not things, a bad so
maybe,
idea.
Maybe, you know, we get a group together to do that all the time because, you know, they're good not just at Christmas. Okay, so we're going to take a little break here and then we're going to come back with Melissa Silva Diaz of El Burrito Mercado. I really wanted to get your perspective on how St. Paul is changing because St. Paul is the most steady changing place I know of. So I want to get your take on that when we come back. Dara here. All right, we are drilling down, finding out the real meaning of local today on Off the Menu. So I talked to Melissa Silva Diaz for hours. I had just scratched my eye. And so she very kindly tolerated me when I was just – I think I just looked like a refugee from Ren and Stimpy cartoon or something. I just couldn't. I was such
a
mess.
That bad.
I was just twitching and tearing and I think you took pity on me by telling me engaging stories from your childhood, and it was so interesting. And so that story is at mspmag.com. You can find it. It's yeah, I'll put it up fresh on my Facebook page. But if you scroll down a bit on my Facebook page, you'll find it. And it was so great because. You know, it's such a deep connection to the community in a way that is just harder and harder to find. I mean, so many people now we live in our screens, we live in a kind of an international cloud somehow. You know, we're aware of all events everywhere and no events right by us. So tell me, you know, so St. Paul, I could spend the rest of my life just exploring St. Paul. It is a universe and a microcosm. And part of the reason it makes it hard to explore is that no one ever leaves. People that live in St. Paul, they will live there forever and then maybe not talk to you because you're a stranger and that's a little weird. And who knows how long you're going to be there. But tell me about how St. Paul has changed in your perspective because you've been just on the ground in the community your whole life.
I have. Yep. I'm definitely a St. Paul girl. Although Minneapolis is growing on me. And we tease amongst girlfriends, we're St. Small. But I love it, that home, you know, that hometown feel. And it's definitely that sense of community. And I don't know if it's because, you know, I always find it interesting when other people come to town and they say the same thing. Like they move somewhere else from the country here and they land in St. Paul. And they pick up on that feel that it's a community. And because I always think it's something I just take for granted or just because I grew up there. So it is community to me. It's, you know, it's family and it's neighborhood. But to hear other people also talk about it, just I'm like, yeah, it is.
Everybody in St. Paul knows everybody's cousin.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
But how has it changed? Because when I look at that kind of west side of St. Paul, I see development all around, you know, it's tens of millions of dollars of tens and tens, hundreds have kind of poured in all around.
Mm-hmm.
How has that changed the community?
Well, in a good way. I mean, I think it's all been great. We proceed with caution. You don't want it to completely change. Growth is always good. Change is good. I think the city has done a great job actually with recent incidents that occurred, meeting with different community leaders. Mayor Melvin Carter actually just met with Chief Todd the other day. He came in for coffee. And
I guess you're alluding to there was a robbery around Christmas time. And so that was terrible.
After the new year,
just
a couple of weeks
year.
Ago. And it brought the community together, which is one of the beautiful things that happens, I guess, in St. Paul. But in talking with them specifically about just, you know, crime and what's happening, where it's happening, but the response to it, and it is just amazing from, again, from community leaders and government officials in St. Paul. But they just graduated like the most diverse police academy ever in the history of St. Paul. And so that was just really exciting to me. So, you know, talk about change and how the demographics have changed. That says volumes about it as well. Chief Todd was talking, I can't remember the number he gave me, but I know there's a report out there somewhere that talks about the in the last 30 years, it's like 100% change in demographic or just something remarkable. And we feel it in the mercado, but at the same time, we still get it's still home to a lot of the Latinos that grew up like I did on the West Side. And then it's this destination for people that like Dara and other people that love good Mexican food and are just, there's this different experience. It's we want you to feel when you come there, like you've been there before, like that it's familiar. It's familiar Mexican food. It's the sounds, you know, of the great of music, a variety of music, and then speaking Spanish and the vibrant colors and the artesanía. So people travel to Mexico, and we want them to feel they when they walk into El Burrito, they feel that there. They sense that, and that.
And that we haven't changed.
Yeah, I was just gonna say it's changed and it hasn't. Yeah, but that's I think what we love about St. Paul is that. You know, it's familiar. It's home. It's
well,
your
that's
neighborhood.
That's kind of the best case scenario is that you get investment and you keep your character.
Like,
that's the holy grail of future progress. All the things is that you don't want to lose the good, but you do want to replace crumbling bridges. So
right.
All right. So people should come on down to El Burrito Mercado. It's just an institution. I should say, if people want to just, you know, check it out online, elburritompls.com, a great time to go there if you're getting stuff for the Super Bowl. I am very sometimes I feel lazy and I want you guys to make all the salsa and the guacamole and all the things. And I should say that my insider's tip, if you're going to either of the El Burritos, is that the mole, that's your family heritage, like deep roots recipe.
Yes, yes. That is my mama's recipe, and she will let you know if we've changed anything in it. She's actually the last couple times been really happy with it and like, give me a little container to take home.
Oh, that's
so that's
best.
Great. And they're loving the food. And you know, Minneapolis is different. You know, it's also a restaurant. There's no market there. So it's just the restaurant, and we do offer catering from both locations, and there's this you've gotten stuff from the small grab and go deli at both locations. But that mole is you have to try it. And we have the enmoladas, which are the chicken enchiladas with the mole sauce on it. And that's just delicious.
Okay, so those are the insider tips. I know everybody is always wants to get nachos and but also get the mole when you're out there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for making St. Paul awesome for your whole life.
Thank you for having us and for supporting us all these years as well, Dara.
Oh, I'm a big fan. All right. This has been Off the Menu with Melissa Silva Diaz of El Burrito Mercado in St. Paul. We're going to have J.D. Fratsky on here in a bit when we come back. Dara here. Nobody is texting me what you're cooking. How am I supposed to get through this hour like this? 651-989-9226. I'm just going to start making things up. I see Sharon in Bemidji, and she's making a hot dish. And I perceive that Brad down in Mankato is firing up the smoker, even though it's kind of cold out. If you don't tell me, I'll just make things up. All right, what are you up to? 651-989-9226. One very nice text. It's fabulous that your show is still about food, Dara. Thank you, thank you. You know I love to do this. It is a joy of my life, and I have someone I've been talking to about food for my entire life, it feels like. J.D. Fratsky, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dara. It's nice to be here. Thank you.
All right, so people know you as the chef from Dear Departed Strip Club, the steakhouse in St. Paul. People know you as a chef behind the scenes at St. Dinette in downtown St. Paul. And now, because I've actually gotten in my car and driven to Cannon Falls, Minnesota, people
That's right.
will now know you as the chef of Falls Landing. It's like a weird, kind of shockingly great thing in Cannon Falls. And let's just talk about that. Okay, so you have a large building in Cannon Falls, like really large.
Yeah, it's pretty enormous. It originally in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, it was an Oldsmobile dealership.
That's what it was. It
right.
looks like an Oldsmobile dealership.
Right, and then shortly after that, a local businessman turned it into an event space, so people held weddings and proms and family reunions there. And then a local businessman who had a trucking company called Avalon named Dave Olson took possession of the building a few years ago, and he was just going to use it for storage until, much like in the movie Footloose, he got a call from Cannon Falls High School asking if they could have their prom there. And so he progressed to look at the rest of the building, and he was inspired by some of the highway creameries up in northern Wisconsin, like Burnett Dairy. And he thought, why, if they have nice things, why can't we have them here too? So room by room, he kind of transferred everything and remodeled it, and he brought some really great restaurants to this 4,000-person community in Cannon Falls.
Okay, so this space is enormous, and you walk in the we'll get to the snazzy stuff, but you walk in and you think you're just in a convenience store.
Right.
And then you just, you know what a convenience store looks like. There's beef jerky and there's a refrigerator case with stuff in it, and you're just – but then if you look more carefully, all of the things in these different cases, they're from the area, which is really unusual. It's not just – rolled gold, whatever, off the truck. It's actual local products.
Yeah, precisely. And, the stuff on the shelves, too, is, small batch. Some of it is locally sourced, but a lot of it is organic. I mean, there's already a grocery
store. Apples. That's, yeah, I was shocked.
Right.
I was like, local apples.
Metz Creamery cheese curds from Rushford, Minnesota, my old stomping grounds down in southeastern Minnesota. There's a lot of great product available to us that we wanted to showcase. I mean, there's a grocery store in Cannon Falls already, and we wanted to offer something that people wouldn't have to drive all the way up to the metro or into Red Wing for.
Yes, that's one of the great contradictions of modern life, that if you want local farm products, you often have to go into the middle of the city.
Right.
That
right.
makes no sense.
By no means. Well, and that's what's great about it. I mean, like, we do have a farmer's market during the warmer months of the year, obviously. But, the butcher case that we have out front, we're featuring some locally sourced ingredients there. We have a great partnership with the friendship I've had for years and years with Hidden Streams Farm down in Elgin, Minnesota. Again, a really great hub of agriculture. And
so Hidden Streams, I actually didn't realize this until I was there. I thought it was one thing. Hidden Streams is actually a couple of farmers working together.
Yeah, absolutely. Eric and Lisa Klein have been brokering lots of different kinds of, everything from vegetables to grains to animal proteins, for over 20 years. And I've been working with them since I was chef at Muffaletta back in the early aughts. They had a truck, and, some of their friends would drop off a couple of bushels of this and that. Hey, if you're going up to the cities, you want to sell this to some of those restaurants. And it just grew for them over the years, and they've become like a trusted voice of representation for, I think it's over a dozen different agricultural operations down in southeastern Minnesota.
And a dozen different farms are working together under that Hidden Streams.
Yep.
And that's very cool.
Yeah.
And so you get this stuff directly in. So the market is not exactly your thing, but you are part of like the guiding principle and.
Yeah. So, I mean, the title under which I was hired when I started up with them last April was culinary director. And they hadn't had a concept for the dining room over in the south end of the building. So I came in and, we took a look at the operation that we had, and we changed some of the menu for the Roadhouse, and we...
Okay, so people don't know. Okay, so
right.
you're in this convenience store, and it's got local apples and local cheese curds and this whole big deli case of really delightful things, but you make them as well as a little freezer case of Schwann's ice cream, which I am always so happy to see.
Right.
My kids grew up on that Superman ice cream, the bright, colorful. Oh, it's so much dye, but it just gives me good feelings.
Turns your teeth blue.
Yeah. It just reminds me of certain parts of their life. After soccer, the great desire to turn your teeth blue. Anyway, so that's a whole other story. But it's got all these nice little things. But then you go through the convenience store, and suddenly, there's a 120-year-old bar.
Mm-hmm.
It's gorgeous. It's ceiling height. It's the beautiful, bird's eye maple columns and just gorgeous. And there's a fireplace, and it's a supper club. And that's your particular domain.
Yeah. There's five different operations in the building. There's the market with the deli. There's, our event hall, the butcher shop, and then we have the Roadhouse, with our brick oven where we do some pizzas and fried chicken and burgers. And then in the other end of the building, yes, there's Falls Landing. And, Falls Landing, I wanted it to feel like a Northwoods resort. I wanted it to feel like Granny's cabin, that cabin that you go to that, like, isn't necessarily part of your family. It's the one that you got invited to by a friend. And, you know, I wanted that sort of that very welcoming, very comfortable feel to it. And I wanted it to harken back to kind of those pre-supper club days of dining. So we've got this really beautiful 100-year-old bar that used to be a neighborhood bar in Chicago. And then the rest of it is a lot of stuff that we put together. There's this beautiful old canoe that we have bolted to the ceiling, and you know, lots of taxidermy because it's Minnesota and that's the law.
Nothing says you're going to have a good chicken wild rice soup like antlers.
Indeed. We've got a really great menu that focuses on wild game and freshwater fish. And, you know, just that comfort factor that lets you come in and let the world fall off your shoulders for a little while and lets you settle into who you are and how you feel best.
So this is the thing that's happening throughout rural America, is that these, you know, spaces just kind of get abandoned and something new gets built, you know, whatever. It could be a mile away. It could be 4 miles away. Maybe the new thing is a Walmart and the old thing was a Kohl's or whatever. But you have to figure out how to use these spaces in a way that is meaningful and useful and profitable for the community. Like, it has to be that. And that's the interesting thing, is because, you know, Oldsmobile dealership, you gotta, you know, it's a big old spot.
Right. Like I said, when after the Oldsmobile dealership closed, the event hall, the local event hall, was literally called Grandpa's Garage. So so like I said, it had these four different rooms that people would have all these different family and special events in there. And you know, there's still a lot of that left over for us, and that's what's great about that event hall. I mean, we can do all these different kinds of dinners for anybody coming through. You know, we've had class reunions there, we've had proms there, we've had groom's dinners there. You know, and that's what's great about being a focal point for that community. That's what we wanted it to be.
And then you are able – anybody who's seen a car dealership knows how this works. You have some big spaces that are basically windows that they used to be able to drive mm-hmm. cars into the room. And then you can raise that up in the summer and have a farmer's market, like continuous right outside. And so is it working? Do the people of Cannon Falls – Do they want to celebrate the farm, or they want at their night to, you know, celebrate their screens? How does this work?
Well, that's one of the things that attracted me so much to being given the opportunity to come down there and contribute to Artisan Plaza was, you know, I grew up in Winona, Minnesota, which isn't too far away, you know, another southeastern Minnesota, you know, community. You know, so letting people or watching people walk into this space and kind of make it their own has been one of the funnest parts about being there over the course of the past year. You know, we've got a lot of feedback about, you know, the best part about being a restaurateur is, you know, coming into something with a vision and wanting to make a place your own, and then standing back and letting your guests tell you what they want it to be too. And one of the best things about this is, you know, all the specials that we've tried, you know, seeing what works and seeing what people rave about. And I'm just constantly surprised and I'm constantly delighted, especially over in Falls Landing, is like, you know, yes, we have a big old hunk of ribeye on the menu and we have a stuffed walleye on the menu and people, you know, go nuts for those. But a lot of the like Southeast Asian flavors and South Asian and Latin American flavors that we bring to the features that we run every night are the ones that people seem to be responding to the most and are most pleased about.
Yeah. So people are coming. They're coming for the diversity of things.
Right.
That's what you're finding?
Yeah.
All right. I want to ask you a couple more questions. One of them is about kind of the meat scene in you know, whether how are we getting our wonderful Minnesota farm product animals into kitchens, like, it, you know, what the situation there is. And we will get to this. So steak lovers, stay tuned when we come back. Dara here. All right. You all came through for me. Oh, so happy. I've got somebody who is putting together a pizza bar. Family's coming over to celebrate Papa's 70th birthday. That is amazing. And it's fun for all. And you love my show. That's amazing. That makes me so happy. Oh, my goodness. I can't even find the bottom of this. This is such an exciting text thread. Just put a pork shoulder on the smoker, Paul in Winstead. See, that is it's in the 30s. I love a man who can just forget about the temperature and just go for it. That's great.
See, you mentioned someone putting something on a smoker, and hey, someone's putting something on a smoker. There you go.
I had a psychic feeling. So we've got somebody, Kelly in Fridley, is making chili for a chili cook-off tomorrow. roasted jalapenos, and guajillo chili. That's some good stuff.
That's perfect for a Saturday. That's the way you settle into a Saturday, just long, low, and slow chili cook.
I've got somebody who's making a cottage pie later, a shepherd's pie but with ground beef instead of lamb. That is some comfort food. I love it. You're so funny, Dara. I try. My daughter, who is 17, made a Swedish pancakes this morning, longtime family favorite from her dad's side of the family that has been handed down over the years. Very eggy, thin pancake. That sounds really good. I love an eggy pancake. And I love a child that can cook. You did a good job
Indeed.
There, family.
There you go. Raising them right.
I've got somebody who's making Paula Deen's wild mushroom blue cheese pastries and my homemade version of White Castle sliders for Super Bowl. Love your show. Oh, thank you. Look at you making your own White Castle sliders. That is some good American vernacular cooking. I love it. Oh, somebody put the 15-bean soup in the slow cooker with a ham bone. First time trying the recipe in a slow cooker and love the smell all day. That's Donna in Lauderdale has a 15-bean soup in the slow cooker with a ham bone. Okay, that gets you aromatherapy of ham, which
Indeed.
I believe in.
That's right.
It gets you beans, which are extremely healthy. If you had to do one, health intervention in your life, a bean soup would be the one. And you get your minerals from the ham bone just kind of being in the liquid.
That's right.
That's a good one. All right. We've got pork chops and grilled veggies on the Weber. Everybody's grilling.
Get outside, Minnesota. Get outside.
This now suddenly reminds me that I was over by Lake Harriet yesterday, and there was a guy just full-on jogging, shirtless, shorts, the whole thing. It's 30 degrees. Does feel good in January. Oh, somebody's making homemade hot wings tomorrow for the game and potato salad with cowboy caviar. Cowboy caviar, another heart-healthy bean option. I like you people taking care of yourselves. Somebody made a cooked meatloaf last night using ground turkey and lots of chopped onions and green peppers. I remember growing up when Mom made meatloaf a lot. You know, I love meatloaf. Meatloaf is underrated. When I was leaving JD's restaurant, he had his meatloaf just in the cooler.
Right.
And I was talking to you and talking to the server, and I was like, I'm going to get that meatloaf. They put it on my bill for $6. It was the greatest thing ever. I got home. I had a meatloaf the next day. Meatloaf.
Delightful. Yeah, Uncle Jake Dimachowski, who's running our butchery program and is the chef de cuisine over in Falls Landing, and put together a really great recipe for that. So we're running those all the time.
It's really good. It's almost a pâté. It's a very mm-hmm. intense meatloaf. I like it very much. All right, and so that last one was from Chris Schneider in Wilmer, and he is glad I'm still on the air. I am too. Thank you, sir. Loves my show.
Aren't we all?
Aw, thank you. I got a question to do a segment about CSAs. I will do – that's the Community Supported Agriculture. Sign up with a farm. Absolutely. I will make that happen. We've got someone who was hungry hearing us talk about El Burrito Mercado. They're heating up tamales. They made it Christmas time, and my wife is making chicken drummies. Come on. That's living. Tamales and chicken drummies. I will be there.
America
Watch for me.
Best.
Oh, and somebody's making grilled sockeye salmon on the Weber. Everybody's got their Weber out. I love it. Minnesotans are grilling in the 32 degrees. And the last one I'm going to read right now, my husband Russ is making beef pot roast with vegetables in the crock pot and loves my show, Yvonne in Stillwater. Well, Yvonne, thanks for listening. This just made my day. This was so much fun. Thank you, everybody who texted in. And so, you know, a bunch of these recipes were the meats. The crazy coastal elites right now are all making their fake proteins. The amount that I hate this. I've made fake tuna, and now I made fake pork, and I made fake these are people. These are cakes. They're just blends of flour and sugar and oil. And I don't know when people are going to get to the point where they remember that your body cannot build itself on different kinds of cake. And also, at the point that you're just making fake pork, why don't you just make fake T-Rex? Like, you just say anything.
Exactly.
All right. So, off topic. But one of the big problems in Minnesota meat production has been the evisceration of American slaughterhouse culture. There hasn't been – things were closing. Things were not opening. But there is some good news.
Well, there is some good news. I mean, there are a couple of smaller organizations down in southeastern Minnesota that that I know have been opening up. You know, it's a huge struggle. I mean, a lot of the smaller independent operation farms that deal with animal proteins, you know, pork and lamb in particular, you know, don't have places to take and slaughter their animals to USDA certification in order to get them into a commercial distributorship. So, you know, there are a few operations that are going on right now, but a lot of them get booked out by larger operations, so that when, you know, a small mom and pop farm, a small family farm tries to come in and get their animals taken care of, you know, everything's booked up and they don't have somewhere to go. And then hogs, you know, get past their slaughter date, and it just ends up having to be something that stays on the farm. So they get overloaded that way. I mean, there are some good opportunities for places that are coming around right now. Let's see, Market House Meats, which is associated with Fish Guys, took over an operation in Northfield a few months ago.
Okay, so Market House Meats in Northfield. So this is the first new slaughterhouse that I can remember in a while, and they want the family farm products.
Right. Yeah. Right now they're a distributor hub. They're sort of getting it's literally just opened a month or two ago. So they're kind of getting their legs under them as far as, you know, how they're going to operate things. I mean, they haven't gotten their smoker up and running yet, anything like that. But, you know, it's a beacon for something that's going to be able to move forward in the future.
That's exciting. And so you have local meats, obviously. That's been your thing as a chef. Your whole career has been really elevating and talking about the importance of local meats, local farm products.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's, you know, when an animal is allowed to eat the things that Mother Nature intended them to eat, they taste better, in my opinion. So, you know, a lot of the operations that I work with, again, you know, I keep plugging Hidden Streams. You know, there's a Pastures of Plenty out in Kirkhoven, Minnesota. You know, obviously, you know, for a long time I had a partnership with my friends at Thousand Hills Cattle Company, which used to be based in Cannon Falls as well. So, you know, grass-fed beef, pastured animals, pastured chickens, you know, freshwater fish, you know, all of those things really, really bring more deliciousness and a greater sense of health to the menu.
And you're the person who taught me how to cook a grass-fed steak. And that's the thing, is that a lot of people get a grass-fed steak and then they think, oh, it's tough. But no, you taught me that you sear it hot. Hopefully over fire, and then you move it away from the fire and let it get to temperature really slowly. And you have a great one on the Falls Landing menu, and you've like kicked up your game a notch. You do a cold smoke, so it tastes like you had campfire food. That's all the time we had. JD Fratsky from Artisan Plaza Falls Landing in Cannon Falls, thank you so much, everybody.
I was so glad to be here. Thank
I hope you.
You
have the best possible week, and thank you for telling me what you were cooking. It really made my day.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.